Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a difference in the world, and we're going to explore important aspects and areas of life, including physical, mental, business, sales, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. Our broadcast team on Journey to Success so far consists of Michael Collins out of New York. He's author of Ushering in the Golden Age. Taylor Tagg out of Tennessee, author of Enrich Your Sunrise. Ray Stendel, who spoke with me in March at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia. He's based out of California. Dave Yablecki, he is a friend of mine from British Columbia. He provides entertainment for casinos, colleges, universities, and trade shows. And my friend Tracy Montgomery, she's an author of e-books on dating and relationships that have generated close to 20,000 downloads so far. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And I recently spoke at the 2012 Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced and been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1" due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. Despite all those things, I'm very well known for always answering amazing whenever anyone asks how I'm doing. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal, which is a digital-only publication that is the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website. It's tall.com. My guest today is Malcolm Anderson, and Malcolm writes about distance running. His third book, The Messengers, is available in stores across the United States and Canada, as well as online through a number of websites and also in ebook format. The Messengers is about runners who have completed 100 marathons or more. Some have completed more than 1,000 marathons. And Malcolm interviewed over 120 messengers/runners from around the world. Their stories are inspirational to runners and non-runners alike and reaffirm the belief that anything is possible if you set your sights on the goals that are important to you. Malcolm is also the host of a television show that follows the training of marathoners and is the editor of a new book, The Marathon Maniacs, which features dozens of stories from Marathon Maniac Club members. Malcolm himself has completed 46 marathons and ultramarathons. His most memorable races include the Comrades Ultra, the Tahoe Triple, and the Brathe 10 Marathons in 10 Days Challenge in England. Although he's a New Zealander by birth, he lives on a small town in Ontario, Canada, near to where I am here in Toronto. He's also the founder of Run for Tomorrow, which is a nonstop marathon relay around the world that will be held in 2013. For more information on Malcolm, you can visit his website, runplaces.com, runplaces.com. Welcome to the show today, Malcolm.
Thanks very much, Tom. Nice to be here.
I have a very, very good friend, my boss, Miloš Bulatović, who is a marathoner, and so I've learned a lot about marathoning and the commitment that it takes, and also the commitment that it takes from your family as well, because there's a lot of training involved. Tell me about how you first got started into marathoning and maybe how you kind of grew from being a first marathon person to now having done so many marathons and studying people who has done well over 100 marathons, even 1,000.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, it's I think my story is pretty similar to a lot of people, actually. I hadn't thought a few years ago I'd be running marathons, you know, fairly regularly, but my story's a lot like others who, as you get older, you've played a lot of sport when you're young and trying to be fairly active, but then with sort of life, work, family getting in the way, you stopped doing that sort of thing. And a few years ago, I decided I had a chance when I went home to New Zealand to just try and turn things around. So I went out on a beach at home and ran for about 10 minutes. And I look back on that day because just about every part of my body was in pain from that, and I had trouble breathing. And it was just 10 minutes of a run, which, you know, years ago would have been nothing. I wouldn't even thought anything about it. And so it was hard. But I went back again the following day and the following day after that, and just gradually built up the stamina and things start hurting. And then suddenly there's a bit of a transformation goes on because you start thinking about the sorts of food that you're eating and drinking, you know, the proper kinds of liquids, drinking more water, and just generally looking after yourself. And then it just sort of grew and grew. And then I thought, well, you know, with the more distance I was running just to get fit, I started to think about running the marathon distance. And that's what happened. And I'm a writer as well. I enjoy writing. And I saw an opportunity to write a book about my own travel and training and marathon running in general. I'm calling it a social movement. So I ended up setting up 3 marathons in about 2.5 months and writing a book about it. And the idea was looking at the transformation of marathon running right from Athens, where it all started with the legend and the first Olympics back in the 1890s, where there was hardly anyone running the marathon event, right through to the modern day, where you've got maybe up to 20,000 people running for a Mickey Mouse medal in Disney. and in fact, it was even more than that. That was part of the attraction. In Disney, you can do what's called the Goofy Challenge. You can run a half marathon on the Saturday and get a Donald Duck medal. If you run the full marathon on the Sunday, you get a Mickey Mouse medal. But if you run both of them, you also get a Goofy medal on top. So that was the goal, to start with Athens, then go to 2.5 months later, finish up the book and that marathon running experience with the Disney experience, the Goofy Challenge. And in between, there's something else going on these days called the Destination Marathon. And I was fortunate just to see a Cayman Islands marathon right in the middle of all that. So I was in the Caymans as well. And it wasn't,
wow.
It's not like I've got a lot of money to do this, but I had a lot of Aeroplan miles just from my work. So
yeah.
I was able to take advantage of that and write the book as a result.
Wow. And I've also heard or have learned that the social connections you make when you're running are tremendous as well, because generally people who compete in marathons, they're achievers in this world. They're people who are doing interesting things with their life. They have discipline. They have the goals that they're setting and working on. And so that must be been a real added benefit probably that you didn't think of when you started running marathons, about all the great people you're meeting around the world that are, as I said, really setting goals and doing something important and impressive with their life.
You're quite right. I mean, that was something that happened with me for sure, and it still happens. My best friends live in different countries, but we're in contact all the time, and that came about from running. And the book, The Messengers, actually came about from just meeting someone, chance meeting on a train platform in Athens for the Athens Marathon the day before. And I was feeling a fairly big feeling that I was going to be doing the marathon. I didn't know whether it was going to do me in or I'd be able to run successfully or whatever. And I'm talking to a guy beside me, and he said, well, he was from England, and said, well, it's a pretty special day for me. It's going to be my 200th marathon. And that just gave me a jolt, as to my understanding of marathon running upside down. So I spent about 40 minutes talking to Dave on the platform and on the train, freezing cold conditions. But he was telling me all about their marathon experience, and Dave was part and still is a member of the 100 Marathon Club in England, in the UK. Mm-hmm. And there are other 100 marathon clubs all around the world. And I said to him, because I was just amazed, I still am, has anyone written about you people? He said, no one has. We don't really go about advertising ourselves. We just enjoy it. And the reason they enjoy it is, sure, it's all about the health, the physical, mental, social, emotional, spiritual health, mm-hmm. But especially the friendships that they make. And they're not running to beat their best times anymore. They're running because they just enjoy the whole experience, and they look at meeting up with their friends on different weekends to run together and socialize. And it's, And they're not many people are out there breaking world records in marathon running or winning races, but you're doing it just because of everything else that it means to you. And
yeah.
Having the friends and family, the networks all around the place is a big part of that.
Exactly, exactly. Now, of the people that have completed over 100 marathons, is there a big percent that make their living running, either writing or sponsored, or are most of them just people who have a regular job and who have a passion for running and just something they do on the weekends?
It's just a passion to do this sort of thing for the running sake. There's not money in it. No one's making money out of the running solely. Might be the odd one or two of the high profile kinds of people. So, for example, Jeff Galloway, one of the top coaches in the world, is a 100 marathoner. Hal Higdon, who's written lots on running and coaches thousands of people, he's a 100 marathoner. Dave McGillivray, the Boston Marathon director. So, and Marshall Elrich, he's got a great book out at the moment, Running on Empty. Those kinds of people, sure, they're the high-profile people who have a career out of marathon running, but I know lots of people who are just got your everyday jobs that may run from being a nuclear physicist right through to a caretaker at schools or looking after dogs, you name it, but they're out there just doing what they love doing.
Yeah, exactly. My boss's coach is one of Canada's best-known marathoners. I forget his name, some Croatian name, and he's a house painter by trade, so he just that's how he earns his money, and he just loves running marathons. He's won a number of them, but he doesn't run to compete against his time so much anymore, just something that he is passionate about doing.
And that's it's a couple of things that come up when you finish a marathon, you sit around with everyone. First of all, no one talks about their times unless they're just having some good fun about it. It's not competitive that way. And the thing is, it doesn't matter where you come from and, say, your occupation, your status that way, or your income level. Some very wealthy people that can go anywhere they like around the world to run marathons. I know those people, but I know those people who spend most of their time running marathons locally and will go camping to do it. But you never see that kind of sort of class conflict when you're out there with these folks. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I was wondering, because just recently my friend Milos ran a marathon and he wasn't able to complete it. The first one out of maybe 15 or so that he's ran that he hasn't been able to complete, and quite a disappointment. He just figured something he ate the day before, he got really ill, and just could not possibly even walk to finish. And have you come across those? And when you're passionately involved in running like that, do you take it as something horrible, or just, hey, I learned not to eat this or do that, or like, does that happen to you, or has it happened, like, sometimes where you just couldn't complete it?
That happens, yeah, for sure. It's happened to me where it was really, I think, heat stroke last year in Ottawa. There was a marathon sort of late afternoon, early evening, and the heat just got the better. And that's where I think, you know, it pays to listen to your body and have a bit of experience knowing when to stop and not just figuring you can gut it out and you've got to finish it with, you know, nothing's more important. Cause, and especially for people who have run lots of marathons, say they run within themselves and they're running this race for sure, but they want to be running next week or next month. So they're very careful not to overdo it sort of with overuse injuries. And again, they're not trying to run the fastest times. They're just trying to enjoy it. And if they have a great day, great. If not, they're still out there having fun, meeting up with everyone else. And it's a very feel-good experience when you do finish a marathon. It's still, no matter how many times you've done it, it's still a long way. So it's still a feel-good, you know.
Exactly, and running marathons kind of has a lot to do with what I teach about as a Napoleon Hill Foundation instructor, because there's a lot of goal setting and definite purpose in running marathons. Even if you just run one, you got to set a goal, and you got to go from the running kilometer and aching all over to increasing that and getting it a long distance to run. And so it involves tremendous goal setting. Also, that would, it's not like a 1 week goal setting plan. People who are just starting out to run a marathon have to follow a program over a number of months to get to the point where they can run a marathon. So tell me about the goal setting that's involved for not only for yourself, but some of these guys who run hundreds and hundreds of marathons. Do they still set goals regarding running, or the people who just do it for fun, is it not so much a goal setting process for them?
I think it's very much a goal setting in lots of different ways. So you know, when you run your first marathon, the goal is to finish in roughly a time that you think is going to be good for you. And when you hear about people who are starting their very first marathon, lots of advice from the other people who have done it before is just enjoy it as much as you can, and don't worry about your time, because you want to come back and do it again. The point is to enjoy it. For those people who have run lots of marathons, they have different goals. They've already built up a bit of their body's capacity to run the distance. They just need to keep up to date, keep on track with training in between marathons. I mean, I know some people who run a marathon every weekend, and they've done so for a few years, which to me just seems bizarre, but they do it, and they don't really have to train too much in between, but they do it nevertheless. So some of those individuals who have run the 100 marathons or more, they set different goals for themselves. That first of all, they want to run 100, or they want to run 200. They want to run, there's clubs in the United States called the 50 States Club. So the goal of that is to run a marathon in each one of the 50 states. And I know people who have done that, they're on their 7th, 8th, 9th rotation of that. Amazing, just in terms of sheer numbers. But you think about what an amazing experience that they have with all these marathons, and what they are able to take away, because they go to the country inside out, because they've been to all these different places, and they learn a bit about the local history. They get a very real sense of what the place is like just by running the 26.2 miles with 42 kilometers. And so they really get to understand the environment, the world that they're living in. And so then there might be, well, I want to run in 10 countries or 20 countries. And there's another club that I believe is the Country Club, where you join that if you've run 30 countries or more. So it just keeps going on and on. I know one guy, actually Mad Dog, if anyone's listening, he's from just out of Ottawa, but he lives in the States now, just had an email today. He's run a marathon now in 115 different countries. So he ran this 115th just in the weekend. And so that's an amazing. No one else has run in 100 different countries. Another Canadian, Wally Herman in Ottawa, has run 99 countries. So all sorts of different goals are set in different ways, or even running a marathon for every letter of the alphabet. What a lot of people do when they've run a lot of marathons is they start pushing the envelope with regard to what distance they're running. So they've got used to the marathon running. They know the distance, so they start looking at the ultra marathons. So running, and that's any distance more than 42.2 kilometers. And then they're thinking, well, I want to try trail running. And that's a different experience completely, right up to, you know, running 100 miles. So there are lots of people now running 100-mile races, 50-mile races.
Wow.
So it's really, you're thinking anything is possible. You set your mind to it, and I firmly believe that, and that's happened with me. I've kept pushing the envelope. I don't necessarily know that I can do what I set out to do, but I'd rather try it than just assume that I can't do it. So.
Exactly. And one thing that I think about when I think about marathon runners, for instance, when I was in my 20s, I did the firewalk, walked across maybe 15 or 20 feet of 1900-degree Fahrenheit coals, but also living with arthritis and pain in your body from your jaw to your toes 24/7 for 40, however many years, 44 years now. Whenever I come across something that's difficult. I always think to myself, listen, nothing could be as difficult as living in this pain every day. So whatever the challenge might be, it's nothing compared to what you've overcome already. Or I'll think, hey, you did the firewalk. You stood in front of that fire thinking you couldn't do it. You overcame the fear and you walked, so you can do anything. And there must be a similar sense of believing in yourself. When you do a marathon, you must have a sense of empowerment that, hey, if I can run a marathon and train like this and finish a marathon, probably there's very little on earth that I can't do if I put my mind to it. Is that the kind of feeling that people get when they are running, finish their first marathon and continue to run marathons?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a huge amount of confidence building that goes with this, and it's just like you said, yes, I can do it, and I bet I can do this, and I bet I can do that. And I've talked to businessmen who run marathons, a lot of them, and they've said to me, you know what, if I had a choice, everything else being equal, of hiring that person or this other person who's run a marathon, I will hire the person who's run a marathon, because that tells me so much about their character, that they are a can-do kind of person. And
yeah,
even if it's tough and it hurts, they're going to get through it and they're going to be better off for it. And you just keep building up that confidence. And that's what's so one of those many positive things about doing the distance events. And it's not just about running and running fast. It can be running slow. It can be a combination of run-walk. And I know a lot of people who walk the marathons. I couldn't walk. I have walked a marathon. But I'd much rather run it any day, because that's a long time to be out walking. But a lot of people do it, and it's the same sort of thing, that you just have to focus and know that you're going to get through it and make the most of it. And really, when I say that you build up the friendships, you get to know someone really, really well if you spend 2 or 3 hours running with them, because you, for some reason, you end up saying all sorts of things to people who are, you know, for the most part, strangers, but you end up being best of friends and just know each other inside out, and you start to understand yourself so much better as well, which is the other part of this, is when it's a long distance run, even when you're training by yourself or out in a marathon or an ultra, you have to be comfortable with who you are as an individual and happy to be alone with your own thoughts. And a lot of people solve their problems when they're out running, not just distance runners, anyone else, because you just let the thoughts go where they want, and the thoughts may be at 30,000 foot altitude, and then one of them just drops down into the ground level, and your decision's made. And you never plan to make a decision while you're running. It's just that's what happens, and it's because you have that time to be with yourself. And in today's society, more and more people don't seem to have that, because we're caught up in everything that we know about with immediate response, the 30-second sound bite, and always communicating. But you detach yourself from that and you go out and spend time with yourself, you're a better person for it. I firmly believe that.
Amazing. And you mentioned a really good point, that sometimes when you go to look after one area of your life, there's ancillary benefits in other areas of your life. And so you start out to get in better shape, to run a marathon. But as you said, if you apply for a job, the same feeling I have for marathoners as I have for anyone who's completed a black belt in any martial art, if you're an employer, you know that people who have done those kind of things have learned a lot and have become a better person and have learned a lot of things about themselves and self-discipline and reliability and consistency. And so by doing that, you get yourself benefits in other areas of life, because as you said, another person who's a runner or even just admires someone who is a marathoner or a black belt is going to give them an interview because they know the type of person that they've become by participating in running or martial arts or whatever the case may be, right?
It's not a bad comparison, actually, because I've been out on dojos and seen the senseis, black belts, and at several different levels, and you see just in the look of the individual and the way they talk, the way they carry themselves, that they have an amazing amount of comfort with themselves.
Yeah.
Very humble individuals. You'll see that the same with those individuals who have run 100, 200, 300 marathons. Very, it's a very humble kind of experience. if you run three or four marathons or even just one, and you sit down with someone who's run 200, 300, 400 marathons, once you get over the wow factor, you start to see that they've got so much experience, not just about the running, but about life in general. And my guess, I have a research background, I'd love to look at it sometime if I ever had the resources, is that they're feeling very comfortable with themselves because they've had so much time to think about things, to meet different people, to see different places. All the while, their bodies are better off for it, just physically and mentally as well.
Exactly. And one of the interviews I did a few months back was with a woman who was running the Positive Psychology Conference in Canada, the first ever one. And it's something I study and read about, is positive psychology and happiness as a topic. And I would think that the joy and pleasure and fun and the social aspect and the learning about yourself that you achieve or develop when you become a marathon runner, it must equate somehow to higher levels of happiness in life, I would think.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And that was one of my conclusions, I guess, from writing the book, because all these individuals I've met some of them have gone through incredible hardships with personal life suffering and so on, but everyone seemed consistently incredibly happy. And it didn't matter how much money they had. It didn't matter where they lived. It's just they had a sense of comfort with themselves, a sense of self-worth, self-esteem off the scales, because they have been able to accomplish all sorts of things. And just very, very happy. And this relates actually to the research evidence about what are the core components of happiness. Big part of that is having the social connections, the relationships with other people.
Exactly. And that is what they say generates really the highest level of happiness in our life, is the social connections. But also, in this case, it wouldn't be social connections with just your average watching TV 32 hours a week or playing on the internet or playing video games at North Americans. Average, this isn't meeting and having connections with those type of people. This is meeting people who are persistent and consistent and determined and persevere through challenges. And so the social connections you're developing are ones with other high performers or people who are making a difference in the world, not just your average person watching TV after work every night.
That's right. I find everyone I've interviewed or had dealings with the writing of the books have been inspirational individuals themselves, and you know that has an effect with people in their own social network. And you don't want to be kind of evangelical about running, but you know that it makes a difference to yourself and it can make a difference to other people. And you see it also with these marathoners that they try to encourage and get their children out. Not necessary to run marathons, but to go out for the 5K run, the 10K run, the 1-2K run, walk, whatever, to support different charities. It is a very feel-good kind of atmosphere. I know when my two sons ran their first 5K a few years ago, it was a big thing for them. They acted as if it wasn't a big thing, but you could tell at the end of the run they were quite thrilled to have done it. And they're on that kind of high, that endorphin kick high, that they completed it, and they still got their bib numbers to this day and the bags and the caps that they had. Just a great experience.
Exactly, and that's actually one of the stated reasons that my boss Milos runs marathons and trains for them, is he says he wants his daughters to see their father paying such a commitment to running and keeping in shape. And already his 8-year-old daughter is just chomping at the bit, "Dad, when I get older, I'm going to run marathons too." And so you can tell people to get in shape as a parent, or they should get out more or do whatever, but if you're getting up at 5 a.m. every morning to go out running and then you get home just before the kids go to school, they're going to see, wow, Dad gets up early every day and he runs. And so it's a tremendous example to people around you and often, as you said, to your kids. It encourages them because you could tell them, well, you need to be more active. But if they see you doing it, you don't even have to tell them they need to be more active. You're living it for them. And so that's a tremendous gift as well. And what I've also learned from my friend Milos is that when you're a runner and you love marathoning, it's kind of a family partnership, or Napoleon Hill calls it a mastermind group, where two or more people work together to achieve goals. Because of the commitment it takes, the running between races, the nutritional commitment, it often requires an agreement with spouses and kids that, you know, this is important to me, and you know, we're going to do this, and you know, the family is going to have to adjust to it, and maybe everyone can help in a different way. Have you found that with the people who do this passionately and consistently running marathons all the time?
Yeah, family's a big part of it for a lot of people, but it's an easy sell if the family all get behind it, because it is you're doing something positive for your own health, but you know the benefits go beyond yourself, because if I'm the dad and I'm feeling good about myself, I'm healthy, I'm fit, I'm going to live a lot longer, and I'm going to live a healthy lifestyle, and hopefully that is seen by my children, and they incorporate that in what they do. And from my own personal experience, my dad died when I was 11. He died when he was 52 of heart failure, and that was I can't understand all what happened at the time, but that's always been in the back of my mind that, you know, what a shame that he died so young and I didn't get to know him, and I don't want that to happen to me. And so so it's a very easy logic for me. Well, how best do I preserve my health? Well, I stay healthy. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? Well, I make sure I eat the right things. I make sure I get out and do the exercise, and because then I'm going to be better off for it, and so are my children, because I know individuals, and I've got a neighbor, just another example. I could talk forever about these kinds of examples, but he was 330-pound, fairly large guy, just not even 40, and his doctor said, you know what, you carry on like this and you're going to have all sorts of problems that you're not going to be able to get your life back from. He changed his life. He got a calorie counter. He joined a fitness club. He was a large guy. He's lost 100 pounds, and as a result of that, he does look quite different. But his wife joined the fitness club. His daughter joined the fitness club.
Wow,
been quite a turnaround. And I guess what I'd like to see is that people see that there is a need to change before some sort of critical event. It's always kind of ironic when you see someone getting on the heart healthy diet after they've had a heart attack. You know, you can actually do something about your health before you end up having those kinds of conditions, which are, for most people, are preventable.
Yes, exactly. Now, when your kids ran their first race, it wasn't a marathon, but how old were they? And do you have to do different training for kids, younger kids, when they start running, or is it the same kind of basic training as older folks do?
Yeah, different kind of training. It's wise not to get kids into the distance running at a younger age, because their body's still evolving, and there's a risk that you might do some damage as a result of that. So you don't really try and push them into the long, long distances. I've heard of stories of people that do that, but it's wise not to. But to get them enthusiastic about the smaller distance, like the 5 and 10K, and getting out a bit. And it's often individual by individual. You know, there are some kids who just naturally gifted runners who not only are they gifted, they just really enjoy running. So you let that go. But if you try and push the square peg into the round hole, you're probably going to do more damage to a child than benefit. So it's always, your children the best, right? And just so that they're getting out, getting some exercise, and not just playing the video games.
What about, is there any guidelines? For instance, my friend Milos' daughter is 8, and she kind of chomping at the bit, can I go running with you? Can I go running? Would you let them run 5K, or would you let them run 2K, or would you tell them, wait until you're older?
5K, to answer part of your question there, Tom, my boys were, let's see, 12 and 9. So they were fine. They were fine. And I ran with the 9-year-old just to make sure that he didn't push himself. And the funny thing with the kids were, I kept saying, when the gun goes off, don't sprint away. And nodded head. I said it times I was getting bored with myself. As soon as the gun went off, they ran. They sprinted. It's just something that you just have to do as a kid. And I said, oh, well, whatever. So I caught up with them, and they're all red-faced and everything. And so that's just one of the lessons that you learn. I think there are the odd programs out there for children at a young age, but yeah. I think it's really just see how it goes, you know. We're not all great sprinters, great running folks, but we can all run to a certain extent. Without getting too cliched, we are kind of born to run, as they say.
Yes, yes. I read a book some time ago. The author, I believe his name's Stu Middleman, and he does, I don't know what you call it. For instance, one of his records is running 1,000 miles in less than 11 days. So okay. That's like 4 marathons a day. And so those are incredible accomplishments. And he talks about one of the ways he does that and wins some of these is that he walks more than other people, but that means he can go on a lot longer after other people have rested. And he talks a lot about as well that fat in the body can be a good thing. That's where you draw your reserves from, and so important for runners. And so I guess you must learn a lot of these nutritional and health things that are so important to runners, the fat content and fat levels and eating properly. If you're going to do it properly, you can't just practice the running part, right? You have to really practice the nutritional part as well.
That's right. The nutrition does make a difference. And of course, the higher level you go with the running, the seriousness, the more the nutrition is going to make a difference to whether you run, let's say, a 2-hour 30-minute marathon to a 2-hour 20-minute or 2-hour 15 and so on. But for the most part, just about all the world are not elite runners, as much as you like to think you can just go out there and run like the Kenyans do. It just doesn't happen. So it's pretty much a slog for a lot of people. But these people who run, say, 100, 200, 500, 1,000, yeah, they've run lots of marathons for sure. They've run lots of the longer distances as well. And that's when you really start to notice how your body can cope with all sorts of stresses and strains. And you can. There is a 1,000-mile in New York City where they run around the block. Around the block, continuous for, could be up to 40 days. And it's an incredible thing when you think about it. But they do it, and they come out of it. And I met actually the winner from last year. He was here in Kingston, and met with him a few months ago. And I said, what do you think about when you run that? He said, don't think about anything. You hear this constantly. You transcend that, all the thinking about anything, and you're at peace. And I can understand where people get that. You often hear about that with endurance athletes. You just get to that place, and for those individuals who do get to that place, they want to go back to it because it's such a great experience, great feeling.
Tell me about the how do you pronounce that, the Breathe 10 marathons in 10 days challenge in England. What was that like, running 10 marathons in 10 days?
Well, that was certainly an experience, and again, I had an opportunity. I was asked if I'd like to be part of that, and so I said sure. One of those kind of sure, why not kind of things. And it's in the Lake District of England, beautiful spot. We think of all the romantic poets and Beatrix Potter's place and all that. You run basically 26.2 miles around Lake Windermere. So we would get up, there was about 10 of us. We'd get up in the morning, we'd start running at, I think, 9 o'clock, and we would finish the marathon and then go through the same process day after day after day after day, and the body wears down. And if you get a niggly little injury in the first one or two races, you're going to feel it more and more as the days go on. And I nearly got a showstopper injury on in the fifth race, and I thought I was out. I could barely move. and just by pure chance, the physiotherapist had happened to be driving past at that time. And it was very, very embarrassing because it was all sorts of injuries, right, in my backside. And so he figured he knew what to do. So here he was giving me all sorts of massage therapy on the side of the road with cars going past on my backside and me thinking, this feels really good. But it was enough to get me up and going again, and I got up the next day, and before you knew it, the 10 days had passed, and I had achieved what I didn't think was possible. It was an incredible experience.
Wow, and after that, you must have been even more pumped than just doing the marathon. You were like, wow, 10 in 10 days. As you said, there's many things that could prevent doing all 10 in 10 days, even just besides injury. And so the accomplishment you must have felt must have been even a new high from running just a regular marathon.
Well, it's something I'll never forget, and I'll look back on often thinking, how did I actually do that? I'm not an amazingly gifted runner at all, but I just kind of gutted it out and just figured, yeah, I just keep moving. You take every day as it comes and every mile, and you just keep being, you know, you be patient, resilient, and you've got it. And it's great to have that.
Wow. Tell me about Run for Tomorrow, which is a nonstop marathon around the world. It's going to be held next year. How did you come up with this idea, and how are you getting people to participate? And is that the runplaces.com website that people can find out about that?
No, there's actually another website, Tom, called, it's very brief, I believe it's r4t.org, the number 4, then letter T, and then .org. And to 50 words or less, if I can, it's a nonstop marathon running relay event around the world by a core team of 10 runners who each one will run a marathon distance and then pass it on to the next person and just keep rotating, going around 30 countries, starting with at the London Marathon next year. And it's non-stop, meaning that we don't stop overnight. It'll be run through the night, through the day, through the night. So
wow.
In 6 or 7 months. And it's exactly the sorts of things that we've been talking about, is to raise awareness and about running and the benefits of running. We're not asking people around the world to run marathons, but basically just to get up and get moving. Everyone can get up and get moving, right from running maybe a 5K run to deciding, making a public commitment to running or walking around the block twice a week or something like that. But the idea is to make a public commitment on what we call a scroll.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to this, is could you volunteer time to a number of charities and or even contribute some funds. So the Cancer Society is involved, diabetes is involved. We have a pretty exciting relationship with an organization over in England, which involves Princess Beatrice and Holly Branson, Phil Niven, Sam Richardson, and
wow.
So a couple of others as well, and they've been right behind this. And so funds that can be raised could go towards their charity as well. They've just set up a charity. So it's exciting. And 30-something different countries. I already have 5 or 6 core team runners who have said that they want to be part of this. And again, they're not elite runners by any means, but they're individuals who are passionate and committed and believe in the difference that the running can make. And so it's quite brilliant. And so they're willing to leave their jobs and do this. And they're from England, from the States, from South Africa, from India. And
wow.
And we have a physiotherapist who has been committed to us as well to be with the team. So it's just evolving and building up, and all at the moment on a volunteer basis. So we're looking at getting that corporate support set up to make this happen. We're in that process right now to get the development funds there, just to enable it to happen the way we want.
Wow. And your book, The Messengers, is available in the two biggest selling formats, at least that I know of. Is it on Amazon, and is it available in Chapters in Canada?
Yes, it is. I'm not sure physically in the stores, but you can certainly go in and order it online in the stores. It's in some stores, I know for sure. It's all, you can just Google the messengers, Malcolm Anderson, and
yeah.
It pops up in all sorts of online places around the world. I've seen it in different languages. So, yeah, it's the neat thing. So I know it's being bought all around the world, and it's just incredible inspirational stories by people who are just like you and I, you know, relatively normal people, not elite runners by any means, but just making things happen in their life and being passionate about running. More people have run, more people have climbed Mount Everest than have run 100 marathons. And the fact that some of these individuals have run several hundred and 1,000 marathons is just phenomenal in my mind.
Wow. And then also your Run for Tomorrow website again is r4, and then t.org, right?
That's right, yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today, Malcolm. I hold in very, very high respect anyone who runs marathons, and anyone who's run as many as you is quite an accomplishment. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to following that Run for Tomorrow next year.
Okay, great. Well, it's been good talking to you, Tom. Thanks very much.
Have an amazing day.
Great.